Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, July 10th, 2018. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I'm good. I love some soup.
You know, I had a feeling you'd be in a soup mood today. Something told me you'd want some soup. Maybe some finger food to go along with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. John Bartolaro, how are you?
I am good. I'm thinking if only the listeners knew the backstory on this, they'd be rolling on the floor.
Well, that's an oxymoron, John, because if they knew the backstory, they wouldn't be listeners.
That's a really good point. Yeah. So, listeners, the fact that you don't get to the inside joke, you're welcome. Oh, man. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Jamf Now, and we'll talk about them in just a bit. But first, we should probably talk about the internet and how happy Tim Berners-Lee is about the way the World Wide Web has turned out.
Well, first of all, like, shall we thank him?
Yeah. Yeah. If it wasn't for his efforts decades ago, we actually wouldn't be here right now doing this.
This is absolutely true.
I remember using his first web browser, sort of stitched together into Mac OS 6 or 7 in 1992, running on a Quadro 700, and it was buggy. It was this is even pre-Mosaic, guys.
By definition.
And it was an eye-opener. Because we were running web browsers on the Unix workstations that were in pretty good shape, but running it on a Mac was pretty new thing to do. So I was there, and when it all got started,
did you have to take a dinosaur to work back then?
Yeah, I had a pet dinosaur.
Dino? Was the world in black and white, or had they already done color yet?
Oh, I dream in high definition.
I think it was black and white for John, but some people had gone around and done like recoloring on things.
The thing is,
the internet existed for years before it went commercial, somewhere around 96. And we were having a great time, and the internet was operating as intended. We all had Mosaic running on our Unix workstations. We were having fun building websites. You could keep a list of all the different websites. There was one site that maintained a list of, there was like 100 or 200 in no time. And soon it got out of control, and you couldn't maintain a list on a web page of the different websites. But we thought, surely 200 websites is all the world will ever need. And it was a very academic, it was just exactly what Tim Berners-Lee envisioned. And then there was the decision in 96.
Wait a minute. I'm calling balderdash on that.
No. It was working correctly. It was the decision to go commercial in 96 and allow ads and commercial entities and commerce that changed everything and launched this path that Tim has been complaining about.
Okay. Tim Berners-Lee envisioned the web is being decentralized and open to all the people. Mm-hmm. He did not envision it to be a playground for nerds, for academics.
Well, the reason he originally wrote it was as the scientists could exchange, could file and exchange and read each other's research papers. That was the original goal.
Okay, and we also need to separate the internet from the web.
Yeah, the internet's underlying technology, TCP/IP, and transmission of packets. But the
web and what Tim Berners-Lee and Vint Cerf created was the technology that became known as the web.
Yes.
All right. So, despite John's academic fantasies here,
his romantic memory,
I was there. I lived through it.
Despite that, today, the internet is effectively controlled by, you know, if you, if, and we're all talking about, by the way, we're talking about a Vanity Fair piece on both Tim Berners-Lee, the
from Friday's Particle Debris, page 2.
Indeed.
I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes.
The story is about Tim Berners-Lee. It's about the origins of the web. It's about how the web has become non-decentralized and how he is working on a platform that he is calling Solid, you know, web, Solid. Did you see what he did there?
That's really clever.
Yeah. That would re-decentralize data and give us privacy and control over our own data. At least that's what he's envisioning. And the object here, because from his perspective, and I agree with him, the web is today is essentially controlled by Facebook, Google, and Amazon, and each in their own different ways.
So when Solid becomes a real thing and not just this this growing concept with development happening.
If it becomes a real thing.
Okay. Yeah. If it becomes a real thing, then how long before it becomes what we currently have? Because well, at it, some point it gets big enough.
Depends on how it's designed. I take it from what I read that these protections are built into the very foundations of Solid.
Okay, so all these protections are built in there, but there has to be an infrastructure for this. And at some point, someone is going to decide, you know, I can make some money in this place.
Yeah, it could. It could be by definition. It could be subverted. But we don't I don't think we know enough about it to know how likely that is. You know what, John? Man, get Tim Berners-Lee on background mode.
Yeah,
I will do that. Learn more. Yes.
Yeah, that would be just
if he has freaking time.
Fantastic.
Time
don't,
for
don't
me.
Work, don't give the, not if he's got time for you, man. You're John freaking Martellaro.
Yeah. Yeah, line up to be on your show.
I have had some pretty interesting guests, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, so there's no reason why Tim Berners-Lee wouldn't come on your show. Anyhow, I would like to know how this Solid system can be built so that the foundation, which is it's decentralized and everyone maintains control over all their own data. How are they going to keep it that way long-term?
Well, I don't know, but I do know that Tim Berners-Lee has forgotten more about being smart than I've ever known. And that he is the kind of person that could certainly champion this into existence. And I understand your hesitation, but I really don't think we have anywhere near enough knowledge about what Solid is and how Solid works to be able to start picking apart how it's going to fail.
I agree. I'm just voicing my concern but my concern is that we'll have this really awesome thing and then humans, by their nature, will find a way to screw it up for us.
Yeah, probably. And there were a couple of quotes I like from this piece. He talked at the end. Let's see if I can find it again. He said that actually. All right, let's get the last quote from the Vanity Fair piece. You don't have to have any coding skills. You just have to have a heart to decide enough is enough. Get out your magic marker and your signboard and your broomstick and go out on the streets. And this is about taking control of the interwebs away from the corporate powers that be. He also said something about, let me find it, it's about bugs. He said that while the problems facing the web are complex and large, I think we should see them as bugs, problems with existing code and software systems that have been created by people and can be fixed by people. Heck yeah.
I like that idea.
Well, let me give a sort of a different viewpoint on this. I was thinking about Medieval Times the other day. I'm sort of an amateur theologian in my side life. And this has always been true going back in time when rich and powerful people preyed on ordinary people. You know, there was a time in the Middle Ages when people went out, saw a parcel of land, looked around, nobody was using it. They built a house, started a farm, raised chickens and cows, and they had a happy life, and they were minding their own business. And then the king comes along and says, guess what? You're living on my property. This is my kingdom. We're going to send a guy around every month, and he's going to collect taxes from you. And so this kind of really annoyed the peasants, but they had no way to fight against the king's army, and so they had to pay their taxes. And eventually this drove people into the cities where they couldn't afford to pay taxes in the country and own homes and raise a family and farm. They had to work as servants in the city. So it's from time immemorial, those people who've had power and wealth have figured out a way to utilize the vehicle that's before them, whether it's land and, you know, agriculture, or whether it's machinery and building industrial empires, or whether it's the internet. There's always been sort of the land barons, so to speak, who figure out how to exploit whatever is in front of them in order to make money. And it's really hard for the individuals who are living their own private lives to fight back in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. So if Tim Berners-Lee has conjured up a mechanism within the realm of the technology of the web or the internet to undo this age-old problem, my hat's off to him. It'll be great. It's going to have to be really good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would love for this to be a huge thing and to give us the sort of web that we really want. One where we get to control our online fate.
Yeah. But to John's point, and then to Jeff's point, to all of our points, there's a whole lot we don't know.
Yes.
And solid is far from being solid. And it's far from being a solution. But it is something that Tim Berners-Lee and some other smarty pants folks are working on. And I wish them Godspeed.
Me too.
Yep. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they come up with. Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor today. And that sponsor is Jamf Now. And if you're not familiar with Jamf Now, what it does is it lets you manage all of your iOS and macOS devices so that you can make sure you have the right settings on everything. You know what apps you have installed. You know what operating systems are installed. You can set minimum requirements for passcodes. And anyhow, it's just this really powerful tool for managing all your devices. I've been using it to manage my devices, so my iPhone, my iPads, my Mac, and then I also added in my parents' iPhones and my mom's iPad and my dad's iMac so that I can stay on top of their settings. And when something goes wrong on one of their devices, there's a good chance that I can fix it by pushing settings back out to them and save them the frustration of not being able to, say, check email or having to wait until the weekend so that I can drive out to see them. And it's just been this really powerful tool for me. And it's great for your businesses as well. But, you know, I just had to point out that this can be a lifesaver for family relationships, too, especially if you're the person that has to do all the family IT support. So what Jamf has done with Jamf Now is they've tried to make this easy and affordable for everyone. So you get your first three devices for free. And that's forever. So let's say next year you get a new iPhone, just take your old iPhone out, put your new iPhone in, and you still have three devices, because I'm assuming everyone also has an iPad and a Mac, and you just keep going, and it's still free. If you have more than three devices that you need to monitor, then it's $2 per device per month. So it's really affordable. So if you if it's for you and your family, that's a pretty inexpensive peace of mind. And if it's for your business, all right, well, that's not much to pay to be able to manage all the devices that your staff is using around the office or out in the field. So what you need to do is go to the Jamf website, jamf.com, JAMF.com/TDO, and sign up for your Jamf Now account. It's free to sign up forever. You get those first three devices for free and only $2 per device per month after that. So it's an awesome deal. It's it has saved me so many headaches over the years. And yeah, I'm a very happy Jamf Now user, and I would love for all of you to be happy Jamf Now users too. So head over to their website, jamfnow.com/TDO, and thank you to Jamf Now for being our sponsor. Okay, so the other thing I wanted to talk about today before we wrap up is USB restricted mode, because it's part of iOS 11.4.1, which was released to the public yesterday. And the idea is that if your iPhone has not been unlocked for at least 60 minutes or has not been connected to a trusted device, like say your Mac, for 60 minutes, the Lightning port locks down and becomes just a charging port. That means no one can plug in a hacker device to that port to try and hack into your phone and get at your personal information. I think that's an awesome feature, and I'm glad it's enabled by default. So the protection is just there if you've updated to iOS 11.4.1. The problem is that a security researcher has figured out that it is stunningly simple for someone to bypass the security features that USB restricted mode offers. So all you have to do is take a dongle, you know, like a video out adapter for your iPhone or iPad, or a camera card reader. Plug that in, and USB restricted mode won't turn on.
So likes.
Yeah. Now, if you plug in a dongle after that 1 hour window, okay, it doesn't work. So you just have to do it within hour.
If you have stolen the device, or if you have confiscated the device, if you're law enforcement, for instance, your first course of action should be to plug in the dongle to keep the device from going into restricted mode.
Mm-hmm. And I have a question, Jeff.
Uh-huh.
Easy peasy.
What if it's been more than an hour since you've logged on to the phone? So you're walking around with the phone in your pocket, and it's been 2 hours since you've logged on.
Then this won't work.
It's already in restricted mode.
Yeah, it's already in restricted mode. So the trick is you have to have logged into the phone in the last 59 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has to be confiscated within that 59-minute window. And then somebody
Stolen. Far more worried about stolen devices.
Right, and then hurriedly plugs in a dongle, not knowing whether it's been an hour or not since you've logged onto the device. Chances are you may not have.
Yeah, and they would know if it's been more than an hour, because they'll get the dialogue that says, yeah, you can't connect stuff to this phone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if someone can get a phone and get a dongle plugged into it within that 1 hour window, then you've completely bypassed USB restriction.
Okay, well, the question is, so an obvious workaround for the workaround is for restricted mode to kick in whether or not something's plugged in. But then how would that work if you're, you know, going, doing, you know, video out through a...
That's a really good question.
Or, you know, or you've got a thumb drive or something plugged into it. I mean, it is the reality that that port is simply useless without bypassing restricted mode, and that may be the case.
Yeah, it's You know, I got a comment on Twitter after I ran my article about this from Joaquin Durand, and he said, imagine you have been driving for an hour using CarPlay and suddenly your iPhone disconnects from the car just because it entered USB restricted mode.
Yep.
And that's a totally valid issue. So the workaround that I envision from Apple's perspective is your device is unlocked. You connect the whatever the dongle is, hook it up to CarPlay, and because it was connected while the phone was unlocked, it maintains its connection when USB restricted mode otherwise kicks in. But, I mean, I say that, but I have no idea if that's something that they can actually code into the system.
I have another thought, too. Mm-hmm. And that is operational practices. If you're in the mall somewhere or out in public and you're done using your phone, you shouldn't just put it away depending on the sleep timer to time out. You should put it to sleep before you put it away. Or, you know, activate the auto lock.
Yeah, but you can't. Yeah, you should.
Because
you should also never ever leave your house unlocked, and you should never leave your keys in your car. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we forget things, and sometimes we events overcome us. Like for instance, you know, you're not going if someone snatches your iPhone out of your hand. Of course, you're not going to have been able to put it to sleep, etc.
Right. Et right. So
it's definitely not. I don't know what the workaround of the workaround is, but I think that the point made to you on Twitter, Jeff, is highly accurate. How else is this stuff going to work?
Yeah. And my guess is that Apple is already working on ideas because they want our iOS devices to be as secure as they possibly can. But they have to balance that with usability. And if we have a device that, say, we're on a road trip, we're listening to music connected directly into the car stereo, and after 60 minutes it just shuts off, well, that's just going to piss off everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know where the balance is in the code to make everyone happy.
So the verdict we were talking about before the show, the verdict that it's stunningly easy to work around, producing the notion that it's stunning stupidity on Apple's part is wrong. There's a compromise here, and it's the characterization that it's stunningly easy to work around is not quite right.
Is it stunningly easy to work around? We just don't know how hard it is to fix.
Well, it goes to how long it's been since the person logged in. If it's been 61 minutes since the person logged into his phone, then it's not so stunningly easy to work around because it's been deactivated.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the characterization by the security researcher may be overreach a little bit.
I don't think so.
All right.
It is a stunningly easy workaround. It's not 100% workaround, but it's pretty easy.
How about if we phrase it this way, to say that Apple neglected to think about this scenario as an active negligence is wrong, and rather that it was a design compromise?
Well, we don't know. I mean, it may be that they thought, this is a fair compromise. Or it could be that for whatever reason, it didn't occur to Apple that this could be a problem until the security researchers pointed it out.
I'm having a hard time digesting that idea. I think Apple engineers are too clever to just blow it like that. I think there were other considerations.
And yet...
Well, actually, okay. To John's point, this may be that Apple took the questions that I was asking earlier, like how else are you going to do this? Like, you know, they chose a trade off between convenience and security.
Mm-hmm.
And but that doesn't change the fact that it is a stunningly easy workaround.
Yeah.
There may be a reason for that stunningly easy workaround, but the stunningly easy workaround is still there.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Brian.
Yeah. Okay, woo! Peace in our time, plus the kids made it out of the Thai cave.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, all of them?
All of them were out, and the coach.
Yep.
All right.
Everyone got out safe. All right, on that happy note, we're going to wrap up. Brian, thanks for being here today.
Peace in our times and soup.
And soup. John, thank you for being here as well.
And bread bowls. You're welcome. See you later.
And bread bowls. And thank you to Jamf Now for being our sponsor today. Head over to their website, jamf.com, jamf.com/TDO. Sign up for your free account and start keeping track of your iOS and macOS devices, just like I'm doing. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.